My butt all got stretched a little bit.
I got a tight little butt.
Look, I'm about to light this shit up.
Coffee Chatter Live, where you guys at? Oh, Canada! Coming out of the answer tent right now. Pop Dog, Millionaire! Let's make some noise, Tory Nighthawk! Whoa!
Show 226, Jar Stud Day. We got Mr. Sixth Time coming on the show, Palm Daddy.
Huge show. We're back, baby. Dude, what a way to kind of, you know, we always say we're back when we take 1 week off. It is what it is. We're back. What a guest to have on.
How many weeks off? We don't take many weeks off a year. Maybe like three?
I'd say three to five. Three to five, probably. I think that's in the good range, right?
That's probably, yeah, maybe, but I think five is pushing. I feel like three to four, probably.
I think that's about right. We've done, what, 226 shows now? Once this is show 226, I almost forgot to press record on the mixer.
Did you press it?
I pressed it now. I pressed it like late during the intro music. So people listen to the podcast now and be like, why did the intro music, like, why was it half? And that's why.
So. December 12th, 2023, we're live on the Facebook, on the Coffee Chatter Facebook page. It's kind of funny. I just turned it on and I don't know if you've seen it, but the captions are auto-generating. It's just transcribing it. And it was on the intro and it was Donnie's part. And I just logged on as... So I got a tight little butt come across the caption. So that was a good way to roll into the show.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks to our live listeners on Facebook. ProGate Europe, winning starts the great gate. Mr. Sixth Time knows when he starts the great gate.
Absolutely phenomenal gate starter. I just started briefly watching. I saw like a little video from Barry breaking down the vet pros versus the pros. And he was taking a look at Joris's gate, dude. And Joris just has flawless form. You want to look at a guy that just has effortless gate start form, you look at that guy right there. It's just natural pedal strokes. And he does it because he practices on a Pro Gate Europe. It is what it is, you know?
Especially when he won his first World Cup in Papendal 2017, right in front of yours truly.
Right in front of old Terry right there. He just fucking I got a
first class view of his first World Cup win.
Phenomenal seat for it, really. It's just, you know, the best in the house.
Yeah, couldn't be better, really. But yeah, it'll be fun to talk with Joris about his 2023. He had a pretty like interesting year because he started a little slow, I would say, in the USA BMX series. It was a lot of Cam and Isaac going back and forth early in the year. But then he kept it going and really had a career year in the World Cup series and the USA BMX series.
Dude, it's kind of wild to think about how I think. I won't lie. Like there's a lot of people, myself included, at the start of the year was like, damn, like it's going to be tough for him this year. Like he is getting older. He's got his family. I bet you his priorities are probably more in the Olympics now, like with another one coming up in France. So to see like the first start of the year being like the Cam and the Isaac show, it's like, God damn, like it's going to be tough to come back. And then it just felt like he got better and better. Like as the year went on, as the World Cups went on. And then at the end of the year, he just seemed dominant again, like just classic Joris, like knows. It's not how you start the year. It's how you finish the year. He just, it feels like he knows that. And dude, it was exciting to watch him. So it'd be interesting to talk to him about all
remember
that.
Remember 2 years ago when he won the title in 21 after the Grands, I'm pretty sure he was like kind of contemplating retirement. There was some retirement talk. There was some stuff going on. And then 2 years later, he's won the title in the last 2 years. It's like,
you can't count this guy out ever, dude. It's insane. Like I count him in. He's until LA at this point in my mind.
Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna get to Joris in about 20 minutes or so. A couple house cleaning items. We rolled out the Chatter TV series this past week on our Instagram page. We haven't done Chatter TV in a while. So there's six interviews from the Grands we posted with Jack Davis, Lauren Reynolds, Josh McLean, Sam Willoughby, Anthony Bicardo, and Freddie Villegas. So if you're interested to hear from some of your favorite pros, go on our Instagram page and check them out. The poster is real, so enjoy them. They're good. They're good interviews. It's fun, like laid back, the kind of way we like it.
Nothing too serious. Some random questions, some good questions, a little mix of both most of the time. I think kind of like what the podcast ended up being, like some actual good insight questions, but then some, you know, pretty bullshit stuff at the same time. So I'm a fan. I like the way we rolled it out. I like that better than the YouTube. I know we switched this over to Facebook. Thought we'd, you know, more people would like find it easier to access. And I feel like the same thing with those videos. It's just easier to access on Instagram these days. Like it's just, that's what people use these days. It's Instagram.
it is what people use. It's kind of our thing and where we post most of our content on Instagram, obviously. So I think it made sense to post it there instead of YouTube. Plus, we filmed in portrait instead of landscape, which is a whole fucking nightmare if you're going to try and post portrait on YouTube. It just looks bad.
It's just a hard situation to overcome at that point. So
we had to make the decision before we did the interviews, and we chose to do portrait. And then once you choose, you can't change it.
Yeah. It's true. You're stuck with it. You're not doing anything. You're not zooming in so much to, like, if you zoom in enough to make it portrait at that point, or sorry, to make it landscape, you're just going to be looking at the guy's nostrils.
It's not going to work. No. You're just going to be even more zoomed in on Jack's cock in his interview than otherwise. So.
I have a question from our Instagram DMs, and I don't know if we want to bring it up now. It's a little bit of a discussion one, but it's more of like,
send it. It
might be a short answer. It's from Legacy Race Ray. Raceway BMX, and it's a screenshot of, I don't know if it's one of that says here for tonight's show. My question has to do with the picture above. It's a screenshot of screen grab from a pro's GoPro from the grands. The picture is the gate right as they're snapping, where the gate's still up, but the tire of the guy looks like it's beside the gate, like, you know, mid snap where you kind of angle to the side. And then with these individual gates, when it's not that straight pro gate, you can get your tire beside the gate. And then he goes on to say, do you think this is an issue with this gate? Think it's an international or just result of being in lane one? Thoughts?
You'd have to snap pretty fucking crooked. Like, you'd have to either, yeah. I mean, I guess if you line up in the middle, you have to snap crooked, or unless you just go on the one side. But I think you'd still have to snap fairly crooked, no? Like,
I think you would too. You really have to, I mean, you really have to crank your wheel to the side to do it. And I think you would have to be starting on the side of the gate, which with this gate, with that that gate that they have at the grands, like, there's like a different in the grip. Like, one grip is like vertical, one is horizontal. So it's like, I can't remember which is which, but if you're on the outside or in the inside of like the actual gate that's up, it would actually be worse than when you're in the middle, like the grip would be. So I'm not sure if somebody would risk that standing in that section. So I think you just really have to snap really sideways to get around, like this screenshot is.
Kind of a fair point though. I think it is more fair if it's just one solid piece of gate. Like, I don't think the individual is the way to go.
I don't think it's the play because of this reason too. Like, you can probably find ways to cheat the system in a sense of that sense. Yeah. Which I don't think is the way to go.
Okay. So speaking of this, I also had someone send me a photo of, it was like a mid snap photo of another round at the grands. And some of the gates were showing to be farther, like, I don't know how to explain this. Some of them were farther down than others. So essentially they're falling at different times. So there was a photo that came out earlier this year. I think it was in Turkey of the same thing, but I think they said it was the shutter speed of the camera and not the actual gate. So I don't know if it's necessarily accurate, the photo.
Yeah.
I know nothing about cameras and shutter. I don't even know what the fuck shutter speed is. I know nothing about this.
Talk out your ass. But
that's what I've heard.
No, I think it's probably that. Like, I get that the single gates, I think they're probably easier to push down. I don't know the system. Like, I don't know what's underneath that gate at the grands. I don't know how it works. But that is that when we saw the video of the pro gate one, we were told, and I think it was pretty obvious, that if you're further or closer to a certain point, the shutter speed is going to capture a certain point at a different point. So it's going to look like it's distorted. The picture's going to look distorted. I think the exact same thing would happen with this, with the individual gates, except you're not going to see the roundness. You're just going to see individual gates in different spots. So it's going to look like they're going down at different times. Now, the thing is, if it was all scattered across the picture, like, if it wasn't,
hey,
like,
that's what I was just going to say.
If it wasn't in a uniform,
sorry
line,
to interrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, is that it wasn't in a uniform line. The pro gate one, it was on par with, like, it wasn't wavy. It was like kind of in unison.
Yeah.
So you could attribute that to shutter speed, I guess. But this photo I saw from the grands, it was all different.
Yeah, that's tricky then, isn't it?
Which is a little dicey for sure. I mean, you think logically, if they're all individual, it's possible, right? I don't know.
And especially because, like, you remember those old pro gate, those old pro gate ones that were single gates? Like, people said if you snapped hard enough, you can almost knock it down a little bit. So you could just, like, smash the gate and it would kind of go
a little
bit.
Yeah, but I think if you still smash it, though, it's going to be slower. Like, you're still, it's going to be like hitting a speed bump.
Right. Like, you're not going to get the momentum after.
So you might be ahead for half a pedal, but it's not going to matter.
Is it going to be worth it? Probably not.
Speaking of the gates, Connor, me and Connor were talking after the Grands last week, I think, about stuff. And he was saying, you know what's interesting? He's like, no one hits the gate anymore. Because the gate is such a fucking rocket, you can just stand there and just floor it on red without any regard. And he's like, it's kind of a lost art in a way, like 5-10 years ago when the gates were like kind of average speed and you could certainly hit them. Like if you left on the red light or first beep, you would probably hit it. So you had to be kind of relaxed, like kind of see red light, pause, and then go, or just lean farther back. And it was harder to time the gate consistently, especially like you get in a semi situation or a main when you're in three and you got fast guys on both sides of you. It's tough. It's really tough to stay patient without feeling like you're late. And nowadays it's almost like less thought process. You just get in there and pin it. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how that's changed, and I actually hadn't thought about it, but it's true. Like, do you ever see anyone hit the gate? You don't really.
Now, I remember we talked about, I think it was with Graf a little bit too, and we were talking about that dynamic. It's like you have a sport like us where we consider ourselves a sprinting sport, and you have the dynamic that you can hit the gate, so you need to have like a calm mind and have strategy to leave at a certain time. Whereas if you look at other sprinting sports like a 200 meter dash, a 100 meter. Yes, you can false start, but you can't leave too early in the sense, like in reality, like you're not be able to react too early. So it's kind of like, it's almost a personal preference, what you like. And personally, I like the idea of seeing who can react the quickest. And there's going to be a lot of other people, and maybe that's biased because I could react quick and I'd hit the gate sometimes. So that is biased. 100% is biased, but there are definitely going to be other people that like, they like the, I don't know if you call it artistry, but having to slow yourself down, figure out a slow gate, calm yourself down, and maybe leave a little bit later. I just like the fact that it's like you're ready, you're ready to go, and you fucking unleash like a racehorse as soon as the beep goes.
Couldn't agree more. I think we're a sprint sport. There's no way you should be able to hit the gate. Like you said, like that was my point to Connor too. And like we were just kind of talking about it, but it's like, yeah, like look, 100 meter, the gun goes off and you just react and go. We should be the same. You shouldn't be able to hit the gate. Like they shouldn't, you're not hitting anything in 100 meter sprint or like swimming, same thing off the blocks. You just react.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with us. Like we shouldn't have to think about hitting the gate really. So I think the system is better now, but it's just funny that it wasn't always like that. And all those years that we raced on like kind of slow gates or random, or not random, but average speed, and you could hit the gates. Like what are we doing here? Like, why are we making it so we can hit gates? It's just dumb.
Yeah. I think I thought it was very frustrating. Like it was just like, especially cause you go to some that were so slow. You want to just pin it. Yeah. It's like, you want to unleash and just go, but then it's like, you got to hold back before you go. Sometimes just made it awkward. Do you think so? Cause your career was also throughout the period of where there was, I would consider okay, the slower gate period. Cause now I don't know when the shift was to this fast gate, but let's say it was in like, I don't know.
Right when I retired.
2018, 2019. Yeah, 100%. It was right when you retired.
Right when I retired.
Yeah. And we had slow gates in 2020. Like there were a couple ones. Like I remember, what is it? Was it Shepperton? I think it was a little bit. Yeah, it was a little bit slow. But it's like, do you think your career would have been better if you had faster gates? Would it have made a difference, do you think?
I kind of wondered that because there's obviously races that I race where the gate was fast and you could just pin it.
Yeah,
I think I was more comfortable on it, but I don't think my results were really any different. Like, compared finishes, is pretty much the same. Yeah, just like getting into the gate, it's a more freeing feeling knowing you can just be like, all right, let's just go. You don't have to think about anything else. There's more things to focus on, I think, when it's slower. But in terms of results, I don't think it made a difference. No.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of guess you got to think of like how many times did you hit the gate in a big situation that put you back? It's like, in reality, probably not a whole lot of times. Like you figured it out and you made it happen.
I remember a quarter in Chula Vista, I cheesed it, but I think I just cheesed it. I don't think it was because the gate was slow. That's like literally the only time. That's literally the only time I can think of it, really.
Yeah. Dude, I remember we had a conversation once and it was about like, you know, some people like overanalyzing the times you hit the gate. And it's like, you know what? Fuck it. Sometimes you just hit the gate in a high pressure situation. It just happened to be that high pressure situation. It's not because of the moment. It was just, dude, I just tried really hard to hit the gate. Like,
100%. It's so easy to see someone make a mistake on a big stage and be like, oh, they choked. Choking is like when you literally, when the moment's too big for you, you just panic and you just forget how to do whatever you're doing and cheese it, which happens for sure. But there's other times you just get in the gate and get a bad start or case the pro section or whatever. And it's like, like we've talked about, if you have, say you have 10 starts or 10 to 12 gates at the track, you're at gate practice, you're probably going to fuck one up where like right. You pop up or you're late or you hit it, whatever. So that, I mean, that's what a 10, like, I don't know, anywhere from like a 7 to 10% likelihood that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So over the course of a weekend, like if you make the main both days, say that's it, three motos, quarter, semi-main, that's 12 laps. Yeah, you're probably going to have one like throwaway start.
Right. The odds, it just adds, like, so, it adds up in the odds.
And you don't know when it's going to happen. It could happen first moto. And here's the thing. If it happens first moto and you get six, then you make it through. No one even remembers.
No.
But you have it in the main or the semi, and it's just the lasting thing people think of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's what that's... always the last thing people remember is what's on their mind in that sense. So,
yeah,
interesting thing to think about. It's funny, like, someone like Joris too. I find he somehow is, his gate's so repeatable that the guy, you don't really see him have too many mistakes either.
No, and he's done it for so long. He's just got it fucking dialed.
It's the same thing for how many years? It's crazy.
It's just so dialed. Yeah. Like we'll ask him about the rock main. That's something I want to ask him about, because we heard after the fact of the grand he wasn't ready during the cadence and was yelling for him to hold it. Speaking of the rule, like when they start the cadence, they can't stop it, can they?
Yeah, no, I think it is.
I think there's a rule they can't.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't want to speak on what I don't know either. Then, because I don't know, because I thought it was you can't stop it once it stops talking. So when it's supposed to go to the beeps. But you can physically still stop it at that point, but you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
That's what I thought it was.
But I'm pretty sure. I don't know if there's a difference. I don't know if there's a difference between USA BMX and UCI, but I'm pretty sure in USA BMX, you can't stop it for any reason.
Once it's started. I would love to know that. Maybe we should look into that rule.
I think it's a good rule because, obviously it's unfortunate if someone starts it when you're not ready or like doesn't communicate that he's going to start it. That's not great, but. Yeah, I don't think you should be able to call it off if you're not ready in the same sense, you know? Like, it's kind of guarding against that if you're just not ready to go or,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah. Matthew McKelvey in the chat here says, yeah, correct. Once the cadence starts, it cannot be stopped for any reason.
He also said, side note, Tori, thanks for adding your signature to my helmet at the Grands. Help complete the collection.
Hell yeah.
Palm Dog was hiding somewhere. You're welcome, Matthew, anytime, buddy.
Speaking of signatures, I know this is off topic, but yeah, nice hoodie, by the way. I see that little logo you got on there.
Oh, thanks, bro. Yeah. Got my TNBMX training clothes this week.
Hell yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So this is the same kind of stuff I've been testing for Coffee Chatter.
Love it. All right. Give it the full test run. We want a full R&D.
Full test run. Yeah. But yeah. What do you think? Looks good, huh? Not bad.
Simple, clean, easy, nice little hoodie.
Yep.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be anything, you know, crazy.
TNBMX training. No. TNBMX training merch. I don't know if I'm just going to wear it, if I'm going to sell it, but for now, I'm just going to wear it. But we'll see.
That sounds good.
2024 season's right around the corner. I mean, we're in 2024 in a couple weeks, and then the first race is in Florida, January 5 to 7. Boy, it crept up on us, huh?
It's crazy how fast the turnaround is for people after the Grands, hey? Like, I couldn't do that.
I know, like with all my riders, we're already training for the first few races in Florida and Phoenix all in January. So we're just full train mode getting ready for the season opener.
What off season, right?
Yeah, like this is the time off season we're building and getting ready. But it's very quick. And to be honest, like if you're not putting in the work, it's easy to get left behind because the series, especially with the Worlds in May, the season starts so early.
Right.
Like you got to be ready.
What do you do for your riders like if that... Or what do you suggest to riders like that race the Grands and then have to start racing in January? You don't get to like get an off season break to train or do anything like that.
No, a lot of them had a week off after the Grands to refresh, and then we got back into things the following week. I mean, it's the reality of our sport. It's especially here in the US, it's an all year sport. So you gotta be ready all the time to race.
It's crazy, like I would say the people that race the Grands that are still gonna race the World Cups too, you're just like you have a crazy schedule in the sense of like all the traveling at the end of the year there in the fall, racing the Grands, and then like the World Cup started in the new year, what, end of January, beginning of February? Let me figure out exact dates, but it's like, dude, it's so quick.
It is quick. And you know, it is tough because you'd like to have a bit of downtime and a couple month off season, but I don't know. If you look at a lot of, I guess pro sport, like other pro sports have longer off seasons where they don't play the season, but the more opportunity, I guess from a pro's perspective, even though you would like to have time off, you're more valuable the more you race. So there's more opportunities to race, and it's also a good thing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. Makes a good point. I'm pretty excited to see that.
Especially with it being... That was a tough situation. Tough situation. Go ahead.
We got bad Wi-Fi right now. I don't know if it's because of me being on, once again, my computer and my phone in just the like same house right now, same Wi-Fi, just live streaming on both devices. It's probably that. But I was gonna say, like, I'm really excited for the World Cups being in New Zealand and Australia. Like, the two tracks, Rotorua and then in Brisbane. I mean, two good tracks. I've seen, like, the updated Brisbane track, and I think it looks awesome. So I'm really excited for those. I know it's a long ways away, but long way for us, not for the riders.
Yeah, Australia has a big BMX community and a big following for the sport. So I think it'll be really good. They got some Aussie superstars in the sport as well. Excuse me, being led by Saya. So I think that'll really help it as well. And obviously the last time it was in Bathurst went really poorly with weather and Kai and everything. So I think Oz deserves another shot at some good ones.
Dude, they love BMX. The fans love it. It's a great track there. Yeah, I think it's two fantastic venues to have host the World Cups, and like awesome that we're going back there. Yeah.
What an action-packed few... What an action-packed few months for the pros, let me tell you.
Holding it full throttle for the next little while.
You have to hold it wide open until mid-May, then you get to breathe for a little.
And you can finally just take it one big, deep breath.
So the USA BMX title is always interesting in an Olympic year because generally, even the title favorites, Joris, Elise, and whatever, you got to focus on the World Cup, the international stuff for like the first half of the year, and then everyone kind of does some USA BMX stuff to stay sharp and everything, especially the first few months. Mm-hmm. And the second half of the year, there's nothing else. So you can just go full on to the series. But it's a little weird schedule-wise. And it's probably a little hard to think about in the spring and summer, the USA BMX title, when you have the Olympics.
Yeah. I'm trying to think last time around. Yeah, you really get thrown around a little bit motion-wise because if you're racing for the Olympics but you also want to do the USA, you got to do a few races, whatnot. But if you do well, great. If you don't do well, you're not really concerned about it. Focus on the Olympics. Go to the Olympics. If you do well, you probably don't want to race the series after. If you do shitty, well, you got to get yourself out of that hole because you're probably feeling like crap for a while. And then you got to try to get yourself out of that hole to get going for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see who charges after it. Like, I think Molly can give Elise a serious threat from now on if she really wants to commit to the U.S. series.
Will next year be the year for that is my question. I definitely think so, too. But
I know.
It's like, once again, it's that question. Will she race the full series? Will she want to go after the title? If she does, yes. But I almost 100% guarantee her focus is on the Olympics.
A little side note, though, it's funny, although they used to have World Cups after the Olympics, and now they just completely scratch that because it's not that no one cares. People care, and like I race them, and it was fun, but it was like noticeably not really a big deal. And yeah, no one kind of gives a shit at that point about racing the World Cup.
At that point, too,
I was going to say, do you think if there was no Olympics, you think we'd have a World Cup series?
Yes, I still do. Yeah, I still think we would because I think downhill mountain biking still has a World Cup series. And I know mountain bike's bigger than BMX, but their series is fantastic. They do it. Their downhill's not in the Olympics, right? It's not. I'm not sounding like an idiot. So I think we would still be doing the exact same.
How would you even get downhill in the Olympics if you wanted it to? It's not where are you going to do a downhill in like, I don't know, name a flat summer place where they have the Olympics.
Yeah, that's the brutal part, right? It's like surfing. You got to have it somewhere else. Like you could be like a fucking flight away for the Olympics for surfing, I think.
Surfing is in the Osho, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one's kind of a funny one. Like I don't really get how that's in the show. Like obviously it's a sick sport, but I mean.
I think they're like, I'm trying to think where the venue is, but somebody told me, I think it's very far away from Paris. Yeah.
I've heard too, like BMX, everyone's going to be in a hotel or something for Paris next year. Like it's not going to be the Olympic Village. That blows.
Yeah. Yeah. That part sucks, doesn't it?
That really sucks. You don't get the true feel of the Olympics, not staying at the village. Yeah.
That's that's kind of like the cool part, the fun part. Like, yeah.
100%. That's a whole part about we're going to stay at the fucking Ibis during the Olympics.
It would suck.
That does suck. That does suck.
Yeah.
Is Joris in the chat?
I don't think so yet. I think I'm reading something. Iconic heavy extreme surfing with go to Tuhupo is. I think it's going to be in Tahiti.
It's a French island.
Yeah, French Polynesian island. Is it going to be?
So like, what are we? What are we doing here? It's not even. It's not even close.
What does is this? Am I reading this right? That it's going to be in Tahiti. Get to know top facts about the Olympic surfing venue at Tuapo, Tahiti. Yeah, dude. I think that's true.
I mean, it worked out sick for LA. They can just surf at like Huntington or wherever they surf.
Generally. Dude, that would be wild. Hey, that would be pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, they're surfing all up the everywhere in SoCal. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. It
what if they
away,
had the but... Osho at Chula? They should just have the Osho at Chula Vista. Can you imagine?
Dude, that'd be wild. That'd be hilarious, dude. What an advantage that would be for these U.S. people.
Do you think people would go watch if it was in Chula Vista? Just because it's so far, like, kind of out of the way of everything.
You mean for BMXers or just, like, people?
Yes. No, just, like, people. Because generally, BMX gets sold out at the Osho pretty quickly.
I don't know. It would have to be the Olympic venue. Like, you mean if BMX just... The Olympics were in L.A., but BMX was in Chula. You saying that?
It sounds terrible, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think think that many people are going to it because I think it's too off the grid. And this Chula's not off the grid, but 100%. It's like people go because it's the Olympics. You're at the LA, you're in the Olympics, the shit's happening around you. It's like it's a bigger deal. So I think you get more people there than going to fucking Chula.
I don't even want to think about what the traffic is going to be like in LA during the Olympics. Like you can't even drive through that fucking city as it is at all. Unless it's like the evening or like a couple hours during the day when it's not rush hour.
Yeah.
During the Olympics when there's just fucking millions more people. Like how?
They got to shut down part of the city, I think, for that bit of time. Or else people are like, just give people like the COVID break.
How are people going to get around?
I don't know. Like they're going to have to build a lot of extra lanes, obviously, like they do. Like the extra bus lanes just for Olympic vehicles. But I think they should probably shut things down. Like tell people not to go into work or something.
I bet San Diego's going to get bad for traffic, too, because people are probably going to come down here also.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Joris in the chat now. I'll let him in. I had a question while I let him in. Do you think there should have ever been a race at the Chula Rio, the Chula not Rio Supercross track?
What do you mean? The you one know, the we
big,
rode before
the
Rio?
Big one. Like yeah, the one? Big one after the Rio track.
Like the one they have now. Like the one they have one. Now?
Yeah, do you think they should have ever done a race there?
Fuck no.
Dude, there would have been a huge track to do a race on.
It's way, way too big.
I would have been nuts. So
let's ask Joris if you ever rode that track. Because we both did, obviously.
Yeah.
Joris, can you hear us?
He's just getting his mic and his video. There he is.
Can you hear us? There he is.
I can.
Hey, we were just talking about the Chula Rio Supercross track when they changed it in 2017 and made it huge. Did you ever ride that build, like the one they have now?
Yes, I did. Yeah, we did. I think, don't we rode with you guys, with James and Roman?
Yeah.
Was that 2017? Yeah, we came down to Chula.
And then we did ride together, yeah.
Yeah, I forgot. That was a good one.
Scary. That track would be huge. If there was actually a race on that, I think it would be pretty wild to watch, in a bad way.
Yeah, that would be scary.
I was talking with Picardo at the track the other day about it, and I was like, that's the only pro section I can remember where you just go as fast as you can and just send it.
Yeah, yeah. You had to pedal all the way to the, all the first turn and just, try to get it over it.
Unreal.
That was good, though. I mean, we miss those tracks.
Kind of do. Yeah. We don't really have those at all anymore.
Well, No, you don't have many tracks where you're like that. Mr. Sixth Time, thanks for coming on the show. How was that?
Thanks
how was
for
the
having
vacation?
Me. It was good. Quick but good, was good. Always good to take some time off. Short of season like always, but it's always always good.
I feel like you kind of know that process now, the short off season. We were talking about that, how it's kind of nuts. You don't really get anything, but I guess you're kind of used to it, eh?
Yeah, I know. It's always it's always 2-3 weeks max after the grand, and you back to training. But I guess the body is used to it too, and it's hard to take longer than that too, and then you struggle to come back and back to the gym and stuff. It feels a little bit harder, so it's 2-3 weeks is good, I think.
How do you feel after the year? Do you feel tired?
I felt a little bit tired, I would say, before Grands, more mentally, you know, with all the travel and stuff. Yeah. I think Argentina was pretty tough, 2 weeks there and you know, not seeing a lot of things and being kind of stuck there. And then back to the normal routine after that was good. But yeah, it was tough. But yeah, we're used to it, I think.
Yeah, I feel like you kind of live on the road these days, because I know you kind of, I guess Florida's home for you, but like you kind of got the home base in, like, I guess Florida and France. So is it kind of like you're always on the road?
Yeah, I feel like it. It's hard with the family too. You know, I try to travel as much as possible with them. So when we go somewhere, we have to stay longer than, you know, just a week, or else it's with the kids, it's tough. So we try to make, you know, the trip a little bit longer every time to be able to be all together and enjoy and yeah, not move them around every week. So it makes it a little bit tough being on the road always, but that's okay. I mean, we still enjoy it. It's a good life.
Yeah. How's the transition back to being in France? Are you enjoying being back living in France after the many years in the US full time?
Yeah, it was tough. I think we're just starting to feel like we're home now, you know, like, it was, I would say it took maybe a year to, you know, get back on our feet and, you know, moving houses and all of that was hard. I think we only got our stuff like 6 months or 7 months after we moved, because we ship everything. Wow. Yeah. The container took like, it was supposed to take 4 or 5 weeks and it took 5 or 6 months. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So so it took a little bit of time, and then Tegan was pregnant at the time too. So we were waiting for the baby and everything was in the container and stuff. So that made it a little bit harder, but we found a nice house and now I think it's feels like home too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. How did you, looking back on your, how do you feel like it went? Cause I mean, we were talking about it. It seemed like maybe the year started slow, but I think it was probably one of your best years ever. Otherwise, like, it was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I don't know why it started slow. Maybe coming out of the Grands and, you know, all of that. And taking a bit of time off after Grands always. And the youngest, they can, you know, go straight after the Grands, they can train. And I had to take a little bit of time off because, you know, I need a little bit of more rest and whether, you know, the body and also the mind and stuff like that. So it started a little bit slow, but I knew that, you know, once I get my rhythm going and I knew I train hard and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, for me, it was one of the best seasons. Yeah, you know, winning, I think, 3 World Cups and getting a lot of podium and USA BMX as well. So yeah, it was a good season, and can't complain. You know, it's always good to be able to perform like that and be on top.
Was there a certain race earlier in the year where you started to feel like you were starting to feel it a bit more?
Like my age, you mean, or just my
level? No, just like starting. Yeah, starting to feel like, you could
kind of call the guy old or something over there. What are you doing, T?
Where you started feeling it, like you start winning and, you know, yeah.
I think, well, the year started, I think it was at Houston. I hate Houston. That's the worst race. So I always tell myself I'm not going there, but I always end up going there. So it's always, you know, the same mistake. And then was at All Small after that. I was feeling all right, you know, it was okay. I think then I went back to France when I went back to the US, I think it was like Rock Hill. And then that's when I started, you know, March, April, that's when I started to feel like, you know, I'm back to where I belong and the season finally started, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that stands out that I guess is kind of my elephant in the room I want to ask you about is we're told that the Rock on the main, that there was some noise, that something happened during the gate call. What was it, T? I don't remember what happened, but something happened during the gate call and they like, it was kind of like unprepared. Like they didn't warn you guys when they were about to start the gate. Did that actually happen?
Yeah. So we did the rollout and I was the last one. So when you're the last one, you go up and then they put the gate up and I went on the gate and I wasn't even clipped in and he say ready. And I say, no, like I shouted no.
Yeah.
And then he just sent it too. So I quickly clipped in and then there was, I mean, it's no excuse, you know, they had a better gate than me, but I should have been prepared. But yeah, he just started without any saying anything and without, hearing my comment on that. But I think it happened also. I think the Saturday it also happened for Corbin. I think it was a quarter. Nobody was ready. It didn't say anything. It just pushed and sent it. Nobody was ready. So.
No shit. It's like they just.
He wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough. And also,
It's a main event. Yeah. You know, take your time. You have time. You know, like what's going to be 20 seconds. It's not going to change the whole day, you know?
Yeah.
Just take your time and make sure everybody is ready.
If you're the starter, like you got to make sure you got to make sure everyone's ready.
Yeah, and I say no, and everybody heard it, and he still sent it. So
ready? No, okay, yeah. Fuck yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah,
it is. Like, I mean, you handle. No, it's like that. But it's fucking brutal, though. That's like top of our sport. The guy can't wait an extra second to make sure the guys are ready. Just it's like the classic. I'm just gonna say it to say it, but I'm gonna press the button, not really pay attention. Like, come on.
And that new gate is so—it's so hard to find grip at the back tire. Mm. So you need time to find your grip, and yeah, didn't have time to find anything.
Why is it hard to find grip on that?
I think it's just like the metal part behind is just—it's super slick. Like it has no grip. Yeah, so it's super hard to find.
Weird.
And I think with all the motors and all the gates they do. They never really change it since probably whatever they have it like a year and a half. So it's just super sleek and it's hard for us to find grips.
I think it sits like in the dirt. Obviously, too. So like, yeah, a bunch of dirt gets kicked up onto it.
Probably the dirt's coming. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the little,
like that.
Little
fine.
Yeah, the little teeth, they're not very sharp either. So it's like, yeah.
So obviously like didn't win the Rock, but Rock's kind of like a warm up for the Grands. So he's going to come down and performing at the Grands anyway. So I get into the night show. Maybe explain to people, like obviously with the three mains and stuff, what's your strategy for lane choice and all that kind of thing?
So the night show is for me, it's like 2 days in one day. You know, you have the morning where you need to qualify for the night show and then you have the night show. The lane pick, it's hard because you don't really want to choose first. So you want to see the other rider, you know, the top rider choosing what like his combination before. But I think I choose in first and I usually take the same gate, 3-6-1. I try to be inside in the last one. That's what I take. And that's what, you know, that's kind of my strategy to try to be inside in the last moto and try to get the best result in the second one because that's where you're outside. So when the second one is done, you kind of know what you have to do for the last one.
Yeah. Like obviously, especially when it's kind of one versus one for the title, it's almost an advantage to pick second because like he did, you could pick inside two out of the three mains really. Yeah. So
Yeah. Exactly. I think Cam got, it was 147 or something like that.
Yeah.
So he was 2 times inside of me. So yeah, but you know, it is part of the game too. You try to don't think about that too much. You just take your gate that you like and do what you have to do.
That would be a bold strategy in the semi to try to slow up just to get a slower lap time. Just can you imagine?
Especially now with the lap time, because before it was just, you know, whoever gets the best, you know, motos and ranking, but now it's lap time. So it's hard to stop or go slower.
Do you still think like the night show is probably one of the best like shows in BMX like that we have? Do you think it's one of that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. It feels like it's getting a little bit less and less. I remember the first few I did was like more people, I think the atmosphere was a little bit more like better. But it's still, for me, it's still, you know, one of the top race of the year. They know how to do that in France as well or in Europe. Yeah. But in the States, I think that's the best one for sure.
So talk us through the three mains, obviously going into whoever won between you and Cam would win the title and first main outside of Cam. What was the mindset like going into those?
I knew I had to, you know, I had 2 times outside of him. So I had to be strong out of the first turn, the first straight. Because it was hard to pass, or else you need to do, you know, a crazy move somewhere last turn or something like that. So I was feeling pretty good at the night show and was able to, first man was able to get a good start, was able to, you know, shed the inside of him. And then I think he got third and I got the win. So I was it was a good first man for me, you know. We had one position difference, so it was good. And then the second man outside again, I had a decent gate, but I think I did a good first jump and I was able to shut him down too. And he tried to push me a little bit out of the turn, and unfortunately for him, he crashed. So it was kind of the hand for him and for the overall as well, because he I don't know what he got, 6 or 7, but you know, I had the first and a second, so it was I just had to ride my race in the last one and do what I could do. So it was after the second one, it was kind of over, and he didn't race. So
you kind of expect that in the first turn if you know he's on the inside like that.
I did, yeah. I mean, yeah. I knew, for the title. Exactly, yeah. And you know, nothing against him, but I know he's kind of like that. You know, we saw beginning of the year with Isaac and stuff for the battle, you know. That's how he raced, and I knew that, you know, I had to be very careful of everywhere, trying to shut the door, and you know, no mistake was allowed for me. So I knew something would happen, and it happened, so.
Three mains is kind of a lost art in our sport. I like that it's still at the Grand for the title. I think it's really cool and kind of the trademark. Like, we used to do it all the time, obviously. And now you do it once a year. What do you think of the three mains?
Yeah, I love it. And I think it's cool to change the gate like they do. It gives you a little bit of, after every main, you know, you kind of reset and restart almost from zero, you know, unless you crash and have a eighth place. But if the top riders stay, you know, in their position, first, second, or third, it's all open until the last one. So I think for the people and also for the consistency for the rider, I think it's mostly I would say the best rider wins out of the three main. So I like it. Yeah.
Okay. What's your thoughts on the track this year? I thought it was kind of, I mean, we were chatting about it like before, and it was like, I thought it was probably one of the best actual racetracks they've done in a while.
Yeah, I think so too. It was the first straight was good, you know, especially compared to last year. Wide open first straight, and then the second straight was good. I mean, the pro set wasn't big, but it was, you know, technical. It's an indoor track, so you also need to take in consideration that. But it was good. I mean, third straight, long rhythm section. One of the best, I think. It is what, you know, Grands is for, you know, big track like that with a lot of room and stuff like that. So for me it was one of the best.
I hated the last go around where they made the first straight short, so it's like, you got, if they have the space, you got to use the space.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, what's the point of not doing it if, like you say, you have the space, do something nice for us. Mm-hmm. and like for a nice show. I mean,
Do you feel a sense of comfort going to the Grands in Tulsa, like just going to the race knowing you've been able to perform there and deliver titles in the past? Like, you go there, you know, with good confidence that you can do it every year?
I mean, you know, I, at the point of my career, I know how to get fast when I need to, and I know how to, you know, be prepared for those kind of event. And with the success I had there, always, you know, I don't always know I'm going to win, because you never know what happened. And, you know, you're against some good competitor, but I'm always confident that I will come prepared, and I've done the best training and stuff like that to be prepared for that event. And I think the three main events suit me very well too, you know, to be consistent every main and be in the fight for the title. It's always something I enjoy, and I enjoy the night show so much, so it's always a pleasure.
Dude, BMX just must be so fun for you, hey? Like, I mean, just like, we are talking about it, like just winning races, dude, like in the night show.
It's
like,
gotta be
dude.
A good time.
It's gotta be, it's so gotta be much fun. Like, it was fun when you're not winning races, and when you are winning races, dude, it's just like, come on.
It is fun. Yeah. it's always fun to be up for the title, because, you know, I always talk with, you know, the Frenchie that comes, and for them it's just one race. They come and, you know, they perform, and it's fun. But to be up for the title and to have, you know, all those people that, you know, watching you, like during the day, you know, you make it to the night show and you still have that semi that's, you know, you still need to make it through, and then after that semi, it's like, it's almost a new race, you know. It's like you still have three more races, and it's just yeah, it's the hype and the vibe and everything. It's, yeah, I mean, I just love it. I still love riding my bike, so yeah. It's always fun.
And man, what a grind to win the USA BMX title. Like, the season's so long and there's so many different types of tracks. Like, you got to be good on supercross, regular, everything. It's, in terms of, like, yeah, the titles you want, how does it, like, in terms of difficulty, it's kind of different, obviously, compared to World Cup or World Champs, whatever. Like, how does it rank in terms of difficulty to win for you?
Yeah, I think it's challenging because you start in February and you end up, you know, the last one is the end of November. So it's like, and in between that, you have to be prepared for the World Cup and the World Champ and other event that you can do. So I think it's, yeah, that's what's super challenging, is to be able to be consistent all year long on different track. I mean, you can go from, you know, Nashville Superfly to a Supercross Hill to dirt turns and all of that. So that's super challenging to be able to be consistent on every track and be consistent all year long to be able to have a shot of the title. So that's not an easy one to get, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of the World Cups and whatnot, you and Romain obviously duked it out this year, and that was extremely entertaining for all us watching. What was that dynamic with him? Because, I mean, obviously you guys are boys, traveled a lot together. But I know when it comes race day, it's like, it doesn't matter who it is and whatnot, but is there a little extra, like, is there more fire because it's like, it's Rome, it's one of your boys? Like, is there extra there?
We don't talk to each other anymore. We're not friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. He's a real, Romain's a real dick. He's, yeah. Romain's hard to get along with.
Until he stops winning, he's not my friend anymore. Then we can be friends again. I think we also had different, you know, time of our career. You know, I'm, let's be honest, I'm towards the end of my career. So it's probably different, you know, I'm not racing just against him. But no, I think it was, you know, I had a lot of questions about that, but we just kept it normal, you know, like out of the track fun, you know, together. And I think we have a good relationship. And when we're on the track, we were able to, you know, put everything on the side and race, like, you know, I would race anyone. So it was good. And yeah, super happy for him, you know, all the hard work and dedication, and he deserved it for sure. So it was a good season for both of us, and didn't change anything for both of us in our friendship. So that was good.
I think that's really cool about the French team in general. You guys are all really good guys and, man, phenomenal racers, and you guys really support each other. Like, you guys seem genuinely happy for each other when others do well. And I see, like, when Sylvain got hurt or Pills, like, you guys all commented on their photos, like, being supportive. I think that's really cool because it's so easy in sport to be selfish and competitive. But I think it's awesome that you guys are all like that.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, I think we created a good team over the year. We have been together for, I don't know how many years, but a lot of years all together racing and being in the same team. And like you said, you know, when you race, we don't have any, I mean, I'm not going to say it's no friends, but it's no, you know, whatever you have to do, you'll do it, whoever it is. But when we're out of the track, I mean, why not enjoy it all together and be friends and, you know, have a good time all together instead of not talking to each other and be rude. And, you know, if you spend 2 weeks in Argentina without being, you know, happy and having a good crew.
Without friends,
That would suck. So I'd rather enjoy that and be good guys all together and enjoy our time. So yeah, we're able to do it. So that's cool.
Just thinking about it, it's a good thing that, like, the countries, as France especially, doesn't give out bonuses to the riders for podiums at World Cups, because you guys would just run them.
Just bankrupt.
Dry.
Bankrupt the country of France.
Yeah, we'll have no more money for traveling after that.
What still motivates you at this point in your career?
I don't know. I still enjoy it so much. You know, I still enjoy training, waking up in the morning and you know, going back to training, gym and riding my bike. And like, I take 2 weeks off and I miss it. You know, I'm just like, what am I doing? It's, you know, it's what I love to do. And it's what I'm supposed to do still. So it's easy for me to find the motivation. And with the Olympic next year, you know, an extra motivation to train hard and to perform there. And I don't know. It's still, you know, I still have the fire and I still have the will to be able to perform. And I think I still have a little bit of time in front of me to do it. So that's what keep me up every morning.
I've been curious, you might have good insight on this, but obviously, because you've been at the top of the sport for a long time, you've seen probably the market of the with sponsorship deals, everything like that kind of go through. What do you see the market as now? Do you still seeing it being as, like, it's been the same for the past few years? Do you see it going down, going up at all? Because, I mean, from the outside, I think the viewer, us kind of thought it was going down for a bit, but it also seems like at the same part, like, there's more, maybe more viewers, maybe people getting more eyes in the sports, maybe things going back up. Any thoughts on that?
I think the bike business is doing the same. They had a big, I would say it was very good for COVID. During COVID, they sold a lot of bike, and then it went down a little bit, but I think they're back to like normal, you know, before COVID and selling bikes like before COVID. I think outside sponsor, they left a little bit. I mean, if you look at like, I'll talk about energy drink, you know, you don't see that many Monster or Red Bull. There's a little bit less rider. Outside sponsor, I think it's a little bit, for the Olympics, they're probably going to come back next year. You know, that's what they all do, you know, 1 year, 2 years before they all show up and wants to have a little logo on your jersey or helmet. So they're probably going to come back. But yeah, I think the BMX industry is doing all right. I mean, I don't see any change, you know, whatever salaries or stuff like that. It's been the same. So, but outside sponsor, I think it's a little bit lower, but probably going to come back this year.
What do you guys think the most?
The industry is pretty strong because I was going to add on. Yeah. Like if you look at moto count, especially through COVID and now, like the sport, especially in the US, grew a lot. Like there's a lot of interest and there's a lot of people going to races. Like I think the industry and sports in a good spot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at the rider count, the motor count, and all the people, you know, I mean, you look at the bikes and stuff. Lots of people have fancy bike, nice bikes, and it doesn't look like nobody, you know, racing a Walmart bike or anything like that. So, it must be doing pretty well.
Yeah.
What do you guys think the most random 1 year Olympic sponsorship deal we see go through? Cause I mean, like you see, like in Moto World, you've seen stupid things like somebody's got like OnlyFans on their dirt bike or something. Like, you think, what do you guys, do you think there's any random ones like that?
Yeah, there will be. Like,
there will be for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Some companies just come out of the woodwork and be like, let's just sponsor someone for 1 year. And it's just like, is that really doing a whole lot? It's like, sure. But yeah.
I think for BMX is harder because you qualify so late during the year. You know, you only know you qualified in May or June. So you only have basically 2 months to, you know, show yourself that you qualify for the Olympics, but they will for sure have a few sponsors that will come up and take you for 6 months and send you a nice check.
You got, it's kind of like, kind of sucks in that sense because other sports, they knew like months ago, they're already qualified and stuff. So they can do so much more in that sense.
Exactly. Imagine if you can, you know, promote yourself for a year that you're going to raise the Olympics, that I'm sure a sponsor would like that a little bit more than 2 months or not even 2 months, because you have that Olympic rule where you can't promote any sponsor for like 6 weeks before. So it's really
tough. Robbery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
James, we get into some questions from the grandstands. You have anything else?
Yeah, we can pull those up. I was going to ask, you're obviously, George, you're a moto guy too. You love it. You've been talking to Marv lately. You guys are buddies. What's the latest on him?
We've been talking a bit. I think he's enjoying his, I don't know if it's retire life, but, you know, not racing and not training as much as he normally do. So I saw he's not racing next year. So I don't know he's not racing, so I don't know what he's doing. Maybe testing a few things for KTM or stuff like that. He's still riding the bike, so I'm not sure, but I'm excited for the beginning of the season. It's coming soon.
He's a bit older, right? He's like 34, 35.
He's, I think, 2 years older than me, so probably 30. He's gonna turn 34, I think. Yeah.
How do you guys think Eli does this year coming back?
Oh, it's going to be tough. Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. Yeah, Chase is so fast.
And Jay. Yeah, and Jay and Lorenz, yeah. I'm sure it'll be good, though. I mean, he knows how to do it. He knows how to prepare himself for that long season. Yeah. So
He's like a Joris.
I would say, he's kind of like a Joris. Yeah, he knows what to do. I would still put him in my top three for sure.
He got fucking robbed last year. Oh, I was so bummed for him.
Crazy.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Just in a matter of seconds, like my god.
And like what, two races before the end or one race before the end?
Yeah, it's like second to last one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Supercross? So it's like
oh my god.
That's insane.
Brutal.
All right, let's get into some questions. From Brigar's World, do you prefer a supercross start hill or a flat ABA start hill, and why? I like that people still say ABA. It's been like 15 years since the USA BMX merged.
For me, I prefer small hill because there is more technical parts that come in play. Supercross track, we only jump basically, you know, there is no technical things about it. You know, we all jump every jump and we just, you know, that I think, you know, like grands, you have a pedal manual on the first jump. You know, the rhythm section can be a little bit technical. There is more technical parts about the small hill that's, yeah, for me, it's a little bit more, I don't know how you say, but like overall package rather than the supercross.
Yeah, I see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. From Brian _ Landers.
Do you have them?
Yeah, I got them up too. Yeah. How do you stay so calm and cool under pressure? I added calm in there.
I don't know. That's a good question. I think it's more, it's like experience. You know, I've done it for so many years that I was stressed, nervous, like, you know, everybody else at the beginning, but I think I learned how to calm myself and be able to perform and be ready for those events and when it comes. So it's almost natural now, you know, you know what to expect. You basically know what's going to happen and what's around you. So it's just, it's just a matter of doing it over and over and it just feels normal now.
Gene Jansen, what does your music playlist look like on race day?
I don't have any music playlist. I don't really listen to music on race day I don't really listen to music. So I don't have any playlist.
You don't need it. You don't need it.
I'd rather just, you know, watch people and take it all in and talk with people. So that's more my thing. Crazy.
Love it. From Cameron 997, is Joris moving to Australia?
Moving or moving like holiday?
That's a great question.
I'm here. So my parents-in-law are here in Australia. They live in Australia. So we try to come every year, you know, Christmas, and enjoy the nice weather when it's raining in France and cold. So that's basically what we do every year. So just here for for some good training. And this year there is a World Cup here. So it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. From Eli Shaw, biggest difference between the Sam Connor and Cam Isaac eras?
Ooh, that's a good one. Does Sam and Connor like crash together a lot of time, or I don't remember that. I know they had a good, you know, I mean, they were fighting for sure, you know, Sam was competitive and Connor was competitive, but do they blast each other or anything? Not that I remember.
I don't think so.
No. Yeah, I don't think so. So really. Here is a difference then.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty true though, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it definitely is true,
First one's from Priz419. He says, what are some of the struggles of getting older in the sport, and what do you do to combat them? What do you do to handle them?
The struggle to come older, I think it's like the motivation, because you have done it for so many years. For me, like I said earlier, it's not an issue. And I think once you find like your rhythm and your balance in life, you know, because it's not just BMX. You know, I think where I am today, it's also because I find a good balance with my family and you know, what I enjoy outside of the BMX. That's make me still being able to perform and be at the level I am at my age. So I think once you find that and you find the good balance in between training, racing, and your family and what you enjoy doing, I mean, you can keep it for so many years. If you watch a tennis player or stuff like that, they do it at 36, 37. So why not BMX?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. From Are the Beers Cold 34, what's your favorite track in the world?
Favorite track in the world? I would say... Yeah, Houston is my favorite one. I love it. So fun.
Dude, it's just so... Dude. Some of those lips and landings, dude. Just the corner.
So good.
So yeah. I never wrote it, so I can't... I don't know.
It's so smooth when you're on and stuff. It's, but enjoyable. I think Sarasota is one of my favorite tracks.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Nothing crazy, but just, for training and stuff, the environment and the everybody around there and the track. Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite places.
I think I have asked you about it, that the track you train on in France back at home with the Supercross Hill, like the what is it, four wide gate?
Yes.
That's kind of how is that one to train on? Like, I'm obviously like, it is super tiny and it's like what, three straightaways that can be turned into four, but does it do the job or is it just kind of like, it works for the time being? Like, it works when you're there.
It does a job. You know, we have a Supercross Hill. I mean, I know it's four people, but still a Supercross Hill, long first straight. And then, you can turn around. So it's if you do a full lap, it's a four straight. Mm. It's a little bit smaller, but it works. And, it does the job and it's good.
That's cool.
That's what we need. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where does it go? From someone. What will you do after? What will you do after you retire?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I don't really think about it. You know, I still have a lot of not a lot of years, but I still have a lot of races in front of me, and I just try to focus on the present and not think about it. I know it might be not the best thing, but I just still focus on BMX and what I can do still in BMX. So we'll see when I decide to retire.
I fucking love that.
It's gonna be a long time, bro. You gotta go to LA 2028. You gotta go to
I
LA.
Got you, I asked my wife and she wasn't really ready for it, so I don't know if she's gonna let me do it.
Yeah. Fair. I think that's it, T. We got a bunch of other questions.
I was gonna ask him the class. Do you have a favorite like Netflix show or streaming service show right now?
No, you know, it's crazy, but when you have kids, you don't have time to watch anything. By the time you put them to bed and you get ready for your time, you enjoy a little bit with your wife and stuff, and it's time to go bed. So we don't really watch anything. The only time I watch is when I go to the races, and I just watch random things that are fun, whatever country I'm in. So no show, nothing like that.
Yeah,
I feel like, is Tally at the age that she can like play with Jet now? Like they can actually enjoy mess around a little bit.
Yeah, they do a little bit. I mean, that's the age where they fight and they want their toys and whatever it is. And she's a little bit wild, so we have to watch her all the time. But I'm sure I will come soon. Jet is more settled down now. You know, you can put him in somewhere and you watch TV and stuff. But she's not there yet.
Yeah.
Joris, thanks for coming on, man. It's good to catch up. And best of luck this off-season and this coming year,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Peace.
There
we go. Joris Dordet, everybody. Hold on. Where's the? We need an applause for this one. We're not into that one without a. There were a bunch of questions in there about talking about the GOAT and being the GOAT, but that's just not something you bring up to the GOAT. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't ask those questions.
No, we're not going to ask him. We're not going to fucking ask him.
No, we're not going to do that. So I was going to mention that, but that's what I just wanted to say after we got him off. Yeah, you can't ask those questions.
No, it was good to catch up with Joris. Haven't talked to him like in depth in a while. So yeah, it was, just saw him briefly at the Grands, but yeah, it was good to catch up.
Loved it. Guys got a lot of knowledge up there about the sport and how to handle the being at the top and racing the top and handling those emotions, handling the Grands, the three motos and stuff. I know, but he probably doesn't want to give all, he's not going to give everything away. It's never going to happen with a rider at the top, but just cool to hear how it's just like, guy just handles business when it's time to handle business. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And obviously there's guidelines for how to stay calm and, you know, handle your stuff at the races, but generally you gotta realize like why you're good and what makes you tick and how you get the best out of yourself. And that last kind of couple percent, you really comes from experience and just figuring it out what makes you tick and what works well for you.
Yeah. He's clearly figured that out. That's for sure.
Yeah. So exciting year this year. Think he's going to do it at the O show?
Yep. I'm saying it right now. Yeah.
God, I can't wait to watch.
God, I love legacies being made, dude. Like history being made, 6-time champion. Like it's just that shit gets me going. I don't know what it is. Like people love underdog stories. I love an underdog story. But when a guy's just, he's almost the underdog now with how long he's been at the top and people keep thinking it's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
They said it couldn't be done.
They said it couldn't be done, but here he is. Right?
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch. It's going to be awesome to watch him in Rome this year at the O show.
Yeah, 100%. So two guys, top of the game, battled out from the same country, boys. I mean, yeah, it's got to be make it easy to race against each other when they're both very clean, respectful racers in the sense of like, they'll take your line. They'll do their shit that they need to do, but they're doing it for a win. They're not going to risk it either.
I'm just gonna start calling him 6-time from now on. Just that's his new name.
Hey, 6-time.
6-time. 6-time.
6-time.
And if you win 7, it'll be 7-time.
Yeah. So awesome. What a show.
All right. Pro Get Europe. Winning starts the Great Gate. We appreciate Joris coming on the show. Good to catch up. Thanks to all our listeners in the Facebook chat. We're gonna be live on Facebook every week, I think, from now on instead of YouTube. So Monday or Tuesday we'll announce it obviously the week of, but yeah, come join us on Facebook.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And don't forget to snap on green.
Snap on green.
Yeah, well, what's this friggin' podcast all about? I don't get it, man. Coffee chatter?
Get off my back, guys. You have to be fast in the track.
I hate that guy.